Susan.
What happened?
I killed her. I just needed somebody to talk to before I go to the police.
Sit down. Sit down.
It was an accident. I didn't mean to. She was with some man and I just must have gone crazy.
The man was there? He saw you?
He saw me go in, yeah.
Who is he?
It's dark.
And maybe he didn't see you.
I parked my car. I stood under the light. He saw me. He saw me.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today, as always, is my cohort in crime, Sam Stepanenko.
Always running, always running.
And Trish Coughlin.
Hey, everybody.
I didn't say hi. Hi.
Do you not want to say hi to our audience?
I always want to say hi to our audience.
Okay.
They might even say hi back one day.
They could be saying it right now.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. If you hear us scream at your radio or phone that you're listening to us on, just say hi.
I mean, I talk to the podcast that I listen to sometimes, so why can't they talk back to us?
There we go.
I mean, I do it all the time, actually. I've got a couple friends that I've been listening to lately, and I'm always commenting with them.
Love it.
No, you're wrong.
This is where we place an ad for your mental health specialists.
Okay, that would only really kind of apply as if you're listening, but nothing's on.
But if they're hearing that, then
probably fine.
Yeah, and I know I'm doing it. It's not like I don't know that I'm not nuts, or I'm nuts. I'm nuts. I know this.
If you think we live in the device, then maybe. Yeah.
We do live in the device.
Oh, my consciousness is elsewhere. Sorry, guys. I'll show you the door later.
The device is awesome. The device is all. Praise the device.
The device feeds us. The device clothes us. The device houses us. All hail the device.
All hail the device.
All hail the device.
Okay. Now that you thoroughly creeped out, let's talk about a movie called The Big Clock from 1948 and its remake from 1987, also called Not the Big Clock. It's actually called No Way Out.
Yes.
No Way Out. You might have heard of No Way Out.
You know, when I was watching this movie, that's how I felt. There's no way out. There's no way out of this fucking movie.
I watched these back to back. I felt somewhat trapped myself.
Yeah. No Way Out. I remember being like this huge hit, and I'm like, I do not remember being kind of this
age
boring.
Well at all.
Does not age well. And I mean,
granted, with modern technology, that movie would be over in about 10 minutes.
Yes. Yes.
Because all that information that takes all movie for it to show up would have been instantaneous.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. It
was. See, I didn't do it. Here it is. He bought this and that, and over. Done.
Yeah.
They hacked in. We found exactly what you were looking for. Okay. Bye.
Bye. Also, that cleaning up that image probably would have taken a lot less time too. It would probably have taken longer for him to remember that stupid box than it took for them to clean up that photo.
For sure. Right? For sure.
He'd have been in jail for a while. I was like, wait a minute.
Well, this was the old days, so a lot of people had a lot more brain power to remember things other than passwords.
Yeah, that's true.
That's very true.
So that's what that's the brain power he used to remember the box.
That's right. Modern technology has forced me to not have to remember anything anymore.
It's sad but true.
Well, and just you forget stuff because you're trying to remember all that other stuff you're supposed to remember about how to use the stuff that's supposed to remember stuff for you.
All hail the device.
That's a t-shirt. I'm writing that down.
This may come back. Okay, The Big Clock from 1948 was directed by John Farrow, who also directed Around the World in 80 Days. Someday we'll cover it, but there's a whole lot of those, so we'll get there. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. This is based on the novel by Kenneth Fearing. Screenplay was by Jonathan Latimer, who wrote a lot of Perry Mason episodes, and an uncredited screenplay going to Harold Goldman as well. I have no idea what the budget or how well it did. I know it did about $2 million in rentals, but that would have been like 30 years after the movie came out.
At least, yeah. I mean, it's in one of the AFI libraries.
Yeah.
It's in the top 100.
Yeah, this originally...
Something, I can't remember what it is, though.
Yeah, this is originally... I was a little confused when I was watching this, because it comes up with the modern Universal logo, yes, and then switches to Paramount, and I found out later, like, this is part of like 700 movies or something that they made within a 10-year cycle and sold off the TV rights to Universal. So it's actually a Paramount movie, but
Is owned by Universal.
Owned by Universal, which I guess in hindsight was kind of dumb of them.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Well, also the guy who wrote the original short story pretty much did the same thing. Ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Ultimately, yeah.
Yeah, and there's also a radio play of The Big Clock as well that came out just after the movie. I guess, well, maybe not just after, but radio was still big in the 40s.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So
it might have been better as a radio play.
Yeah. Actually, when I play the trailer later, they kind of utilize both mediums. As they say, suspense theater. And if you go to YouTube and watch it, because you're not going to get it through the audio that I'm going to play later, you actually see them standing in front of microphones, reading from it, and then it fades into clips of the movie.
Ah,
it's actually pretty neat.
Cool.
It's a trailer I haven't really quite seen like that before. I'm like, oh, nice. This is really a picture of the time, isn't it?
Yeah, that's actually, I didn't see it, but now I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah, it's a cool trailer.
That's amazing. Well, it's really cool. Like, it's, that sounds like one of the few trailers that's acknowledging that transition between radio to television being,
it
or
does,
television or screen being, yeah, popular media.
Yeah, it totally does.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty amazing.
And it utilizes the voice cast of the film.
Yes.
Ray Millard, who plays George Stroud, Maureen O'Sullivan, who plays his wife Georgette, let that sink in for a minute. George and Georgette. What are the odds?
No. Yeah, like, not good.
Nobody in the writing room could come up with anything else.
Yeah, that's really fucking lazy.
Yeah. Well, considering how they react to a woman's death, it's like, the broads, they're all interchangeable. Just give her a name of some kind.
Yeah, give her husband's name. Jesus Christ.
Both of them. Technically.
Jesus. Uh-huh. Yeah. Ray Millard had a pretty great career in the 40s. Dial M for Murder, Love Story. Maureen O'Sullivan did quite well. It'd been a long time since my childhood, but she played Jane in the several Tarzan movies.
Yep.
That's where I knew her name.
Yeah. And in her elderly senior years was in Hannah and Her Sisters.
There we go.
Yeah.
She only did this movie because her husband asked her to, because he's the director, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the only reason.
She still had to audition properly.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, she did do it. She auditioned as a favor to her husband.
Yeah, yeah. She retired from acting for quite a while at that point.
She was raising her family.
Yeah.
Didn't Ray Milland, was he in The Lost Weekend?
I don't have that in front of me.
Oh, okay. Because I remember this guy. Okay, fine. Because I thought you might have come across that. Because I'm watching this entire thing.
He's in a ton of stuff.
Watching this entire thing, I'm like going, I think it's the same guy from The Lost Weekend. Considering what this movie has in it, I kind of got to watch The Lost Weekend and make them as like a pair of movies. Because that would actually work.
I wouldn't doubt it, but you'll have to go to the IMDb. I only write down a couple of highlights.
Because
I don't want to have the iPad in front of me. It's too distracting.
Yes.
Charles Laughton is also in this, who plays the heavy in this, almost a Bond villain, the way he portrays Earl Janeth, this newspaper mogul, which I guess...
Is he based on Hearst?
Yeah, I was about to say, like evil newspaper moguls. They still exist today.
Yes, they do. But now they're going to jail.
Now they're going to jail. George McCready's also in this. He was in The Great Race and Tora, Tora, Tora and Gilda and lots of great stuff. He played Steve. Rita Johnson, Elsa Lancaster, who's in Bride of Frankenstein, and we briefly talked about Mary Poppins during
she's
our...
She's amazing in this movie.
Yeah, so Mary Poppins is actually getting its own sequel thing coming out later this year as well. Harold Vermillier was in I Spy. Dan Tobin's also in this. Harry Morgan is in this, but you know, as Bill Womack. Man, I didn't even recognize him. I was looking for him, and then I didn't even catch it.
Oh, I caught it, but I was watching for him. I'm like, he has a lot of screen time for someone with no dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, during that massage
That's
scene,
why I was listening for the voice.
Yes.
Yep.
That's why I couldn't catch it.
Yeah. I was waiting, anticipating. I'm like, going, just speak once, just one word, please.
Yeah, and no dialogue at all, and it was awesome. He was billed as Henry Morgan in this, though, because but he changed his name. It was to Henry Harry, and then just Harry Morgan because there was a composer, I think, with the same name.
Okay.
So
and anybody doesn't know who we're talking about, obviously wasn't a fan of Dragnet, or you're just too young to remember Dragnet. But nobody's too young to remember MASH because it's still in reruns
today.
It's
still in reruns.
Absolutely.
And I had a lot of fun seeing Harry Morgan in this particular role, again, even with no dialogue, because you remember him as that kindly man from MASH.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Colonel Potter?
It's Colonel Potter,
Colonel Potter. Then to see him play this incredibly effective thug.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It was like... Wow, that was fun to watch.
And as another thug here who played Nat Sperling, this was Richard Webb. And Star Trek fans will remember him as playing Finney in one of the original Star Trek episodes. I remember the Finney episode quite well.
Okay.
Kirk, I do believe he transports down to a planet. It's like a vacationing planet, but things come alive from their minds.
Okay, I do remember
so
that episode.
So he's battling this childhood bully of his, Finny, and there's rabbits and weird things.
Yeah, no, I do remember that episode now. I'm not a Trek fan, but I do remember seeing them as a young person.
Mm-hmm.
In reruns. I'm not that old.
Yes, it was all reruns for us. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that was what we could get on TV when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, they were just, I think, coming back into syndication, maybe syndication for the first time during my childhood. My dad would watch them and I'd watch them with my dad, so I blame my Trek stuff because of my dad.
It was me and my mom, strangely enough, for Trek. She loved Trek.
Oh, yeah. That's my mom does not like science fiction. I blame my mom for the horror stuff.
Oh, there we go.
No, you don't blame your mom. You credit her.
Yes, there we go.
Oh, no. I was traumatized with things like Jaws and Alien when I was like way too young to watch that stuff.
Okay, to be fair.
And then I wouldn't touch anything that came out under the horror category until I was about 16. And then I realized, wait a minute, this is just bloody science fiction. It's science fiction with blood.
Yep.
Ah, okay.
And in some cases, almost like cartoons with blood, like when I watched Nightmare on Elm Street and stuff. And then I just really loved it because it was like, oh, this isn't disturbing at all. This is just hilarious. But then I was starting off with the campy stuff. So ease my way in. So when I actually hit something disturbing, it wasn't so bad. I got desensitized in my teens.
Maybe your mom's timing was just off.
Yeah. Well, we talked a little bit about that in Piranha, so go check that out.
Yes. Yes.
Now, the remake of this is No Way Out, of course, 1987, directed by Roger Donaldson, who directed Dante's Peak, Cocktail, Species. So, yeah, best out of that would be Cocktail, for sure. The story screenplay was adapted by Robert Garland, who also wrote Tootsie. Twilight Zone the movie, did a segment there, The Big Blue, Electric Horseman. Lots of good stuff on that list.
So what happened to this one?
Hey, this was big at the time. Budgeted at $15 million, gross $35.5 million just in the U.S. Yeah. And this was only a couple months after The Untouchables came out. And, of course, that one was up for an Oscar.
Yeah.
Not for Kevin Costner, but...
I do remember. I remember this being huge. I really do. Mm. And I remember people like political thrillers were like starting to be that thing.
Yeah. And I do remember it being big. And I know like Roger Ebert raved about it, said it was a great movie. There are mixed reviews like they are with most movies. But that the fact that Ebert gave it such a great review.
And it might have been great at the time. It does not age.
Oh, no.
It does not age well. It is very much a product of its time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a Cold War setting movie, right? Like mm-hmm. right before the fall of the Berlin Wall and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, this is just before.
Yeah.
I was getting really, really irritated with them just dropping this bullshit about a Phantom sub.
What the I'm fuck?
Like, who gives a fuck? Why do you keep dropping this? and then that weird ending. I'm like, oh, that's why they kept dropping it. But I mean, this is also.
But it also still makes it pointless.
It was right around this time, maybe just a year or two after Hunt for Red October came
which
out,
which was about a Phantom sub, and some of the cast sub. From this movie is in Hunt for Red October.
Yeah, Fred Dalton Thomas.
Yeah.
is in that movie
yeah, so
Gene Hackman's in Crimson Tide, which is also another sub movie.
Yeah And you know, I can't fault the performances in this movie except for Sean Young. I hated her. I couldn't wait for her to die.
I always thought she got better roles than she deserved.
Well,
I don't know, I think she was really good about selling herself as an actress, and she got some good parts for a while, and then after a while I think Hollywood just got annoyed with her, because she campaigned for like things like Catwoman and whatnot. Yeah. But
yeah,
I find she's an overactor.
Catwoman is like a cartoon character. I get that. That actually might have made more sense.
It might have worked for her, yeah.
Definitely might have worked in her favor. But I don't know. This, it's weird. It's sort of like when I was watching it, it seemed like the narrator of her was basically the perspective of both of these men, where she was either like this siren that just sits by the side, or she's just like some sort of adventurous like little girl that it's like a weird fantasy I'm watching. Like a real fucked up one.
it is. That's a really good way of putting it, actually. Yeah, it's because mm-hmm. she's very childish a lot of the way through the movie. I couldn't relate to her character in any way.
I didn't think, you know, I didn't find her childish in her portrayal, more of that giddy, just in love kind of thing. And I you know, that's, I think, what they were going for.
Strangely, yeah, maybe, but yeah, but, she played the ingenue very well.
It's the precursor kind of manic pixie dream girl thing, that free-spirited, very happy, getting a guy to go like out of his comfort zone type of deal. Mm-hmm. That's sort of what this was, I think.
I'm not sure whose comfort zone they were talking about, because we could see them looking at each other in that initial party scene, and then finally he just walks up to her and goes, "You're really impressed with me, aren't you?"
Yeah.
And she's been trying to kind of ignore this, that kind of like, "You're looking at me, but I'm not going to acknowledge you're looking at me." So technically that line should have come from her, not him.
Right.
But he kept catching her looking at him.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that was the thing, is they were both intrigued right as soon as they saw each other.
Yeah. It wasn't a good way to portray that.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. It just didn't.
It didn't work. I liked the way they portrayed it in the original better. It worked better for me. Mm-hmm. As much as I didn't really enjoy either movie, that dynamic between our lead and the mistress was much more believable. This whole love story seemed really unnecessary to the movie until you get to the end there, and then it makes more sense, but it still didn't work for me.
No. And it seems like, I don't know, it just was very quick. I didn't really get it.
You know, that first bit, you get the feeling like, is this supposed to be more of a romantic thriller?
Right.
Like, for a good half hour, like, they really put a lot of time into that romance.
Sailing and go out.
Yeah, it's funny because I texted you. I'm like, fuck, is this movie tedious? And then that was at the 44-minute mark. Mm-hmm. I know, because I looked at the fucking timer.
Then she dies.
And then she dies. And I text Jay going, oops, Sean Young dies by falling a lot.
Yeah, she really does.
She really does. She might have a syndrome there.
Oh, but, yeah. This movie doesn't really hold up. It's boring.
Yeah.
That was about 40 minutes in.
Yeah. And I'll be honest with you, the big clock.
I thought the big clock
checked out
was
a couple times.
I did too. The story, I find both these stories are just overly convoluted. And did you ever watch like The Shield on television?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Vic Mackey does something illegal, and then he spends the rest of the season trying to cover it up.
Well, this is one episode of The Shield.
This is what this movie is.
One really bad episode.
Yeah.
But you could do it in one episode.
And in the end, he didn't do anything too terrible. especially in The Big Clock, where he's not actually having an inappropriate relationship. Like, he's married. He tends to put more focus on his job rather than his marriage, and this is causing a strain in the marriage. And he's trying to put that priority back into the marriage. He's like, no, we've put off our honeymoon for 7 years.
Yeah.
This is it. I'm going on this vacation, whether you want it or not. But being the dick and alcoholic that he is, he winds up losing time over in the pub. I'm like, why were you at the pub when you had to be on a train?
And that drove me
nuts.
With
your boss's mistress.
Yes, with your boss's mistress, which I don't think he knew at the time.
No.
Yeah, he did.
He says that she said they're friends. That was always code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what bothers me the most is, like, she couldn't wait a few minutes. 7 years, you asshole. 7 fucking years, and you're bitching about the last 30 minutes. No.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, you're kind of a dick.
And then he gets upset.
I can understand why she's upset.
He gets upset. Well, I quit my job for you, blah, blah, blah. I'm like going, over 7 years, you never did that. How is she supposed to know this one time you grow a set?
Yeah, exactly.
Granted, you figure that something might have happened. He's like, well, I missed my train. Let's go drink. And just spends the rest of the evening with his boss's mistress.
Yeah.
Looks like they didn't do anything. I don't know.
When they sneak him out, it's the 40s, but he's sleeping on the couch. He's fully clothed. She's off, comes in from the bedroom in her nightgown. So you can tell nothing's actually happened. But that doesn't stop Janet thinking that.
No, of course. No.
Yeah. And this is where the poor mistress, what was it, Pauline York, gets attacked and killed.
With the clock they bought in their adventure.
Which is, again, this weird thing, this obsession. I think this obsession comes from Janeth, because he's very much obsessed with time. There's clocks all over the place. Yeah. He's got a clock, all the clocks wired to the central
control
one.
Of other people.
Yeah, all control. And it's just, he is the ultimate micromanager.
There's a light in a closet on the fourth floor that's been left on all day. Find me the guy who does it.
How did he even know that?
Right?
Yeah. All the floors seem to be bugged. He can hear everybody's conversations. It's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
What is with this guy?
Yeah, he's really, really
paranoid
and compulsive.
Yeah.
Controlling. Like, he really likes the power that he has. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say that my favorite part of this movie is the irony of them running a crime magazine.
Yes.
Yeah, and that was why George Stroud, Ray Milland's character, was hired in the first place. He's good at finding missing people, and he looks at the mundane things that even the cops don't. And I mean, he has a team of himself too. You get a couple of cops put on a case, and the rest, if they're helping out, it's a time and availability where this is their job. So it's like, okay, this guy hung out at this pub, and if they can find all these little pieces that come together, then that's why he's so good at finding people.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, he's an effective character. I mean, as you guys mentioned, there's something inherently unlikable about him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, and I think that might be part of the reason I didn't enjoy the movie very much, is because I didn't really like him.
Yes.
Like, I liked the actor, I didn't like the portrayal of the character itself. I could say the same thing about Kevin Costner. But we find out why we don't like him.
Yes.
There's this whole underlying spy thing.
Stupidest fucking thing ever.
Yes.
And they try to tell you, when he orders Stoli at the beginning of the movie, and they're using this Russian mole thing as a way to find this person. We already know, using this as a cover-up for the murder of Sean Young. So they're using an internal investigation.
Mm-hmm. A rumor.
A mole hunt to pin this murder on whoever this is, and then they hand off that assignment to Kevin Costner, who's basically investigating himself. They do not do a very good job of putting that together right away. They do actually a better job of that in The Big Clock, where he's put on the murder of Pauline York. Yeah. And he's pretty aware right away. There's enough facts thrown on it. It's like, oh, shit, they're looking for me.
Yeah.
Well,
so he's got to put everybody off the scent. And he's too good at his job. He's trained his men too well.
Yes.
Yeah. But they have one point where he doesn't know she's dead for quite a while.
That's true. Yeah.
Until they actually go to her apartment. And again, when you're talking about like an unlikable portrayal, he's very nonplussed that this woman is freaking dead. Like, he's just looking to cover his own ass. It's really mm-hmm. off-putting.
Yeah, you don't see the emotions that at least you get from Costner's character.
Well, yes. Again, there's a different relationship, mm-hmm. right? I mean, she's this...
It was a one-night thing.
Yeah, and
they're not romantically... inclined.
Even then, this woman is dead. Yeah. You met her. You had a good time. Even if it was like a mild friendship, she's dead.
And you got to think the 40s, though, there's a lot of noir crime, and that's kind of how they reacted to it, this kind of nonplussed, almost emotionless thing when it comes to crime that was just... A lot of that was happening in the 40s. It was a trend.
Yeah, and that's what... And I, as I was watching the movie, I sort of identified what it was that where they failed is it isn't quite noir mm-hmm. and it's not quite parody.
You're right.
It tried to walk that line and it just missed it. It probably worked really well in the 40s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but probably.
To a modern audience, it just doesn't work.
No, both of them seem fucking far-fetched and silly to me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It actually seemed even more far-fetched in No Way Out to me.
How was
this going on?
because that's part of our consciousness too, right?
You were searching the Pentagon room to room. They didn't even change the script enough to make it plausible. We're going to search the Pentagon.
With civilians in classified areas.
You're talking at the in peak hours of the amount of people work in and around the Pentagon is around 25,000 people.
Right.
To have three witnesses go through that may or may not have seen this guy.
That's days, not hours.
Yeah. Which is why it made the news in the movie.
Yeah. I mean, they were smart enough to funnel everybody through the same exit, but I'm like, okay, if you know you're looking for a male, just send the women home right away.
Yeah. Right?
That's easy. You don't have to look at them.
And see, that would have made...
There's certain things that were just driving me nuts.
That would have made an amazing twist, a proper amazing twist in that movie, as if Yuri was just a code name and it was just some mm-hmm. woman.
See, I would have bought that twist much better.
There is a code name in this one, too. It's Jefferson Randolph. And I don't even remember him giving it, but it comes up a lot, so...
Who said that? Jefferson? Oh, no. She tells Yaneth before he kills her.
Right. She just pulls out a name out of her ass?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't want to tell him who it really is.
Of course not. Because he works for her.
Hi, I'm Regina Falangi. See, that's how that works.
There's so many things about these movies. It just doesn't work. The whole thing about in the remake where they've dusted the place and every single fingerprint is smudged.
Yeah, no. That's not going to happen. You're going to miss something.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand why he's doing the cover-up. He's the last person to spend the most amount of time with this woman. Mm-hmm. And he's touched things, especially in the big clock. They're on this tour. I liked how they used the painting and flipped it over as the photograph that just kept coming up and...
Yeah.
Whatever, but the painting, I actually like that as the comic relief. I really enjoyed it when I was like, wait a minute, the woman trying to buy the painting was the one who painted it? Why was she trying to get it in the first place?
Because she's nuts.
She's insane.
She's insane. Yes. She's absolutely insane.
But in the best way.
Yeah.
And I just... Best character in the movie.
Yeah. And I just realized we haven't run the trailer yet, so I'm going to run the trailer for The Big Clock, and then we'll talk some more about both of these, you know, because it's what we do.
Suspense. Radio's outstanding theater of thrills presents Ray Milland in a preview of his forthcoming Paramount picture, The Big Clock. But first, a word from the director of this program, Mr. Anton M. Leader.
Suspense is my business. But of the hundreds of spine-chilling tales I've seen, heard, or read, The Big Clock tops the list for its relentless grip on the emotions, for its ever-mounting spell of suspense. And now... Ray Milland in highlights of his amazing role in The Big Clock.
My time is running out. Every second brings me closer to death. They're hunting for me everywhere, but they don't know how close I am. Right here, trapped by The Big Clock. An average guy with a family and a job he liked. with everything turned upside down by the strange things that happened in 36 hours. A wonderful afternoon with Georgette, who wanted me for all the right reasons. A crazy evening with Pauline, who wanted me for all the wrong ones. The long moment with Janet, who wanted me for his own dark reasons.
We have our man. He was just seen entering the building. I wanted emergency order issued. All exits blocked, building closed. Nobody's leave us identified. You take charge.
Yes, I led the hunt for the man that nobody knew. And the orders were shoot to kill. Twisting and turning through all the shadowed byways of a skyscraper city. A grim, relentless search that could lead to only one man. Myself.
Well, that's just a brief hint of the thrills which make The Big Clock far more than just an exciting picture. To my mind, it's one of the screen's great masterpieces of suspense, and it's coming to this theater, so don't miss it.
Right, that was The Big Clock from 1948. A very interesting trailer, to say the least.
It's very classic 40s, except for that fun transition you were talking about. So that's made it unique.
Very 1948. Very much a product of its time.
Now, one of the climax scenes, he crawls inside the clock. I mean, it's supposed to be a metaphor in the book.
It's actually
a big clock that he climbs into. It has a desk and a phone.
And it controls all the other clocks in the building.
It does. All the other clocks are wired to it. Yeah.
And it has the time zones all around the world and around this huge big clock.
It's awfully complicated for 1948.
Yeah. Actually, it was my favorite setting in the whole movie, actually.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if he didn't just take, the war had just kind of stopped, and he decided, oh, you have some old subparts? I could use them to make a really big clock.
I'm still not sure why there was a desk in there, but...
I don't know.
Maybe it's monitored normally, but because of the search, they cleared everybody out.
He did mention a night watchman should be in the clock.
Yeah. I think there's somebody there. There's supposed to be somebody there making sure that it never gets turned off, because he actually says that when the clock stops, he has that little meltdown.
Oh yeah, he kind of hip checks this handle that turns everything off.
Yeah.
For such a big clock, it's just like one switch.
Right? That should be very wrong.
Yes. Where's the protective cover to make sure it never gets turned off?
Yes.
Like the nuclear switch, right?
Yes. And it's right at hip level. It would happen all the fucking time.
Yeah. Right near the desk. Closed. It should be away from the desk.
Yeah. It's like the worst space.
Yeah. No, it should be like the two-key system.
Who designed this shit?
Yeah. Nuclear bombs.
You know? Right? Yes. Or it should be like, the locked cabinets, like with circuit breakers. You have to have the key to open the thing, to turn it off.
Yeah, only Jadith is walking around with a briefcase.
Yeah.
He's got the key around his neck or something.
Yeah.
Nuclear clock.
Okay, if we remake this movie, that's what has to happen.
Maybe it was an atomic clock.
Maybe.
We don't know. We don't know.
Very true.
No, we really don't. Don't want to know.
No.
It's funny.
Everybody who worked there died of cancer.
Eventually, yeah.
Probably.
I had new children and... All of a sudden, we're in I Am Legend.
There we go.
Throwback.
But when you're speaking, I think before we went to the trailer, you were talking about the artist and the sketch of the suspect. And in one of the greatest twists I have ever seen, she abstracts that thing.
Oh, yeah. Her abstraction was amazing. I mean, she did that to protect Stroud when she finds out that this competitor, initially, it's not a good scene because she's trying to buy it and he just offers more money. He's a fan of her artwork, but he obviously doesn't know who the painter is. He knows the name, but never seen her. Yeah. And so he buys the painting. And when she sees another one of her paintings in his office, she realizes, oh shit, I have a fan. Well, I can't turn in one of my only customers.
Yes. Right?
My only fan.
But meanwhile, this painting that he bought in this pawn shop, a painting of hands, is become big news and is now worth $1 bazillion.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing.
And yet she's still not famous.
Yes.
Well, because none of her paintings have been involved in a murder before. So.
Oh, well, there is that. drums up business, apparently.
Apparently, yeah. Either the death of the artist or a death of somebody near to the artist.
Yeah, so needless to say, the guy from the shop is brought in as a witness who faints a lot.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
he's just really sensitive.
He's really, yeah, like he's...
The bellhop as well from...
The bartender.
The bartender, that's right.
And the hat check girl.
The hat check girl. But this bar was interesting as well because it's a case of, like, you get a free drink if you can ask for something he doesn't have. And it is. It kind of looks like he emptied his garage behind the bar.
Yeah, and he just goes to, like, random garage sales and just picks stuff up. I mean, I have a lot of admiration for this guy.
Yeah, so, yeah, yes.
He's amazing.
A green clock. So he finds a green ribbon and wraps it around a sundial.
Counts.
Yeah.
And that is what Pauline is bludgeoned to death with.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the little music box makeup case in No Way Out is obviously the nod to that clock, right?
Yeah.
It's a device that ties our villain to the murder.
And see, but in this one too, they had also a few other things that were happening. That also ties the villain to the murder, but it also, like, you have the handkerchief, you have the money being transferred.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There was one other thing I'm trying to remember.
There was the clock on the floor that broke in the struggle.
Yes. Yes.
That's the assistant, I'm blanking on his name right now. Steve. Yeah, Steve switched the time on, and then when Paul got back to the scene, he switched the time again. And but that evidence never comes into the play story, which is kind of weird. But it was funny that they were thinking about that. You know, okay, this is the time of death, but any good coroner worth their salt, even in the 40s, might have been able to estimate time of death.
Yeah,
and the fact is, like, it is a clock. It's shouldn't it be part of the major story?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a big clock, but it's a clock.
By that point, they're already investigating her death, and her body's still there.
Right.
Cops haven't been... No investigation ever takes place by police.
Not in the original, no. And at least they explain that better in the remake.
Yeah.
I do have to say they explain that better. And I do have to say that the senator, Hackman's character, the Secretary of Defense...
David Bryce.
Yeah. He at least shows some remorse, because in this one, her death is accidental.
Yeah.
Right. It's not deliberate. He doesn't pick something
up.
Somewhat. I mean, yeah, like,
as she's going
left
over
to try
the stairwell, he's trying to catch her.
Yeah.
He is. But I mean, ultimately, if he'd gotten mad enough, she could have just died another way. He could have beaten her.
It was accidental. And he goes to his assistant before going to the cops just to say, hey, he needs a little calming down time. But he fully intends to go to the cops.
Yeah.
And then it's his assistant, played by Will Patton, who we last talked about in episode...
I don't remember. Gone in 60 Seconds, though.
Episode 11.
Wow.
11.
I wasn't part of that episode, so I...
Yeah, no. You have excuses.
Yeah. I knew the name of the movie.
It's from the Jeff years.
Yes. Jeff Months.
Jeff Months.
Yep. Yes. We still miss you, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. We think about you, but not often. Anyway.
Gonna need another Jeff.
We've started numbering them now. This is not good.
Yeah, and he was so smarmy in this. It's not his best performance. He's a better actor than he was in this movie, but he was just so smarmy and so unlikable right from the first moment you see him on screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's so young, though, too. Yeah. Like, this might have been the youngest I've ever seen Will Patton in a movie.
And I think part of what bothers me about, like, it's the problem I also have with Sean Young, his hair looks smarmy.
Yes.
And in this movie, I had to write this down, Sean Young's hair drives me nuts. I just can't. I know it's very 80s, but it looks awful.
It looks like a really bad wig all the time.
You're right.
Because it didn't pop off. That would have been hilarious if it popped off when she fell through the table.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
Or scalped her. Oh.
Oh.
There are times this movie is kind of bloody.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I just had a major point I need to bring up with this movie that I thought was very important, and they get to. There's at a certain point they have quote-unquote evidence of, like, kind of residual semen in her. They're having sex without condoms, like, all the time in 1987.
Yes, I know exactly where you're going, because I was having the same issue with it. Like, the first time they have sex is without a condom.
Yes.
In 1987.
Oh, in back of the limo?
Yes.
I actually like that scene because it was all improv'd.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not a bad scene. Yeah. That's pretty good. But at the whole time, I'm like going, oh, no.
The limo driver's trying to take a peek.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Who looks like John Legend? I don't know why. a very young John Legend.
Okay, I did not get that.
I don't know. But yeah, you're right. Like, yeah. That bothered me so much. I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah, really? How irresponsible are the filmmakers? Really?
That's not the time to be doing that.
Yeah, unprotected sex right at the height of the HIV AIDS
epidemic.
I didn't want to say that word, but it really ultimately that's what it really came down to, right? Is that's right when it was the scary thing.
So it was a passion. They weren't thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's how it happens to all the other people who died.
I guess when you maybe at that level, they're thinking people at that level of you know, they're going to these big posh parties. They are the elite. They probably think they're above condoms.
Or
above AIDS, I guess. But that's not going to happen.
I'm surprised it didn't come up because they do make a point of saying Will Patton's character is gay.
Yes.
Right?
I mean, they don't go out of their way to say much, but you can see in that overprotectiveness of the Secretary of Defense that there's something a little bit more going on. He's Mr. Smithers. Oh, my God. He's Mr. Smithers.
He really is.
He really is.
But also, I kind of see that in The Big Clock, like his assistant there, like Hagen. I get hints of that. I think they really leaned into it in the remake.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Because, yeah, that devotion is really inexplicable in both movies unless there's something else happening there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no way that an assistant would be going, yeah, I've got an idea, we'll cover it up.
Yeah, who, I think it was a man's character who says that he's gay.
No, it's the CIA.
Oh, it's CIA,
they know about it.
The CIA.
It's the CIA because they're starting their own investigation because they don't understand why all of a sudden these resources are all being put into this murder that could easily be investigated by the police.
And they're being left out of it. They're really mad about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really, only kind of guy who's showing them any kind of courtesy is Kevin Costner.
Yes.
But that's why he was hired by the Secretary of Defense to begin with, is he was a good liaison with these other divisions in the intelligence community.
Yeah, and because he was a hero.
Yeah.
Which really, I can't believe that made the papers because it wouldn't have.
Right?
Yeah.
I wrote that down too. Because I'm like going, this is one incident at sea with the Navy. They would never put that in the paper.
We would have never heard that.
No.
They wouldn't want to put that in the paper because part of this was like something had happened on a ship where it was kind of negligent. They left this guy out there. They would never want that in the paper.
No, they definitely would not have. And I'm like, that is not a newsworthy event.
No. I remember having that same thought when I was watching the movie. I'm like, come on.
Right?
It's just a way to pump up Kevin Costner's character a little bit. But
make it a little more heroic. Yeah. But then they fucking blow it with the whole scene in the Philippines where he gets drunk.
Yeah.
He goes to a nudie bar and he tears a phone off the wall.
Right?
Yes. But we forget that scene just prior to that where his bag is taken by a little boy. It's like, let me carry. It's like, oh, this is how it earns money. Turns out the whole time, like, he just finally lets him go. He's just getting a bag full of underwear. No big deal.
Yeah.
And it's actually, it was an actual handoff. Like, it turns out, spoilers.
Yeah.
Yes, it's 30 years later, so fuck off. He actually is a Russian spy.
He is the Yuri they're actually looking for, which is dumb
fucking
shit.
Thing ever.
Yep.
Basically, those last 3 minutes says is, congrats, we just really wasted all your fucking time.
Yeah.
Now go home.
He's investigating
assholes.
Himself for a crime, but turns out
he really
the mole that they made up to do the mole hunt really it did exist, and he was the mole they were looking for this whole time. Yeah. Even though there was no, they made up the mole. It was just like, I just want to die right now. This is like, why did I waste 2 hours watching this fucking movie?
Because we had to.
If that part of
this is the pain we go through for you.
If that part of the movie didn't exist,
it still would have been boring.
It still would have been boring, but it would ultimately have been a much better movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was an unnecessary addition to the to the story because it didn't add anything to it. At all.
Yeah.
The comeuppance at the end of The Big Clock, though, I found much more satisfying.
Yes.
Where they corner Hagen. They try to pin it on Hagen. They know he didn't do it. He knows Janet did it.
Yeah.
So they're trying to pin it on Hagen. Then Hagen's like, screw this, you asshole. And he kind of turns on him. And then...
Yeah, shoots him.
Yeah, Janet shoots him. But then falls down an elevator shaft.
Yep.
Which was greatly set up.
Beautifully
I loved
set
how
up.
They set up.
Beautifully set up. I don't know why this movie... I didn't like... Well, I do know why I didn't like this movie. Because it was too drawn out. I mean, it was longer than it needed to be, but I mean, it's a movie, so you got to give a certain amount of screen time. But it just, it's, this is actually the epitome of why I, for so long, I didn't like these classic movies, because it's a lot of slow plotting scenes before your payoffs. Mm-hmm. Right? And this was a sort of why I didn't enjoy this, is because it's like the first 30 minutes, I don't even remember the first 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. I honestly do not remember them at all. Up until the scene where they're sitting talking in the bar before he misses his train. Like the first 30 minutes, I remember some bits about him and fighting with his wife about the honeymoon. But that first 30 minutes was completely throwaway for me.
It really is just here are all your characters and introduce them. And yeah, there's, outside of getting introductions to your characters, there's not much else going on. But there are a lot of characters to be introduced. So.
There are. But it was just very plotting.
But they're very meticulous in putting all their pieces together. I find No Way Out's a little sloppier.
It is, yeah.
I did like the final act where Costner is confronting David Bryce with his evidence, and then Scott Pritchard, Will Patton's character, comes in and says he's got nothing, and then David Bryce is like, this is over, and I will give you all the legal, it's straight from the original movie, I will put all my lawyers behind, where he just basically turns on his aide. And in that one final act of devotion, he's like, well, there's one more way to get out of the and save his face. They can blame everything they want on me, and he blows his brains out, commits suicide right in the office.
I really, really, really hated that scene where they Pritchard kills Sam. It felt so arbitrary. Sam's betrayal of...
Sam's betrayal feels weird.
It feels very weird. And then the murder of Sam just felt really weird.
I think Sam just being pulled in different directions without knowing all the facts. I think he's just loyal to his job. He likes his job. He doesn't want it threatened in any way. And it wasn't as so much of a betrayal as just the, should I be trusting this guy?
Well,
because he's running around protecting himself, and it's very obvious he's protecting himself, and this is an old friend of his, but his friendship's being pulled in different directions, and between loyalty to his job and his friend, and his friend's looking shadier and shadier all the time. So I didn't actually have much of a problem with that.
I wished it would have built up to more suspicion, because it seems he sort of turns really
dying
quickly.
In a gymnasium was dumb.
Yes. Where was this gymnasium in the Pentagon?
It's not like they were actually shooting in the Pentagon.
I know, but...
exactly. Actually, there was very little actually shot at the Pentagon.
Hey, if you're a listener that works in the Pentagon, tell us where your gym is. If it's not a threatening to national security.
Yeah.
If you're allowed to.
True. Yeah. Like in most movies where they have random locker rooms just located in various areas. Tell us about that.
Yes.
I know. And maybe it's just you're right. I think it's just the way it sort of, it was like a switch. Like it's like he protects him at first, and then all of a sudden it's like all of a sudden he's going and talking to Pritchard about it. When he's already been told that Pritchard is helping with the cover up, right? It's like, where's the suspicion for on that? It's like, okay, where do I go? Didn't feel quite natural. And then of course his
Hesselman really, had all the pieces, but it wasn't quite. The full picture wasn't there yet.
I think my problem with it too is he's the only character I liked.
Yes, I love George Zenza. Love that guy.
And for him to turn on Costner's character was a little disappointing, and then that ignominious death really just ruined what little bit of the movie I did like.
I got another one for you. I can understand in the Pentagon a spy, Yuri being spotted, and a shoot to kill order. Does even a newspaper man have that same authority?
No.
In 1948? I don't think so.
I do not think so at all.
I wasn't around, and I wouldn't be for a long, long time. But I suspect that was a little overboard.
It was more than a little overboard.
Yep.
But don't forget, the police aren't involved. These are his staff.
Yes. Like, wow. Yeah. They're allowed to carry as well. I mean, I guess this is the States, so probably. But
especially at the end of the Second World War.
Yeah.
I think that there was still a certain amount of fear and paranoia there. So I wouldn't be surprised if there were a lot of people carrying.
But a shoot to kill order.
Yeah. Still from then. Still. Just the fear and paranoia has never gone away.
Point made.
Yeah.
Oh, but the one thing that sort of really bothered me when we're talking about Harry Morgan, when he goes into the clock to look for him, and it's like one punch and he's down the stairs. Like, I was expecting more of a grapple or more of a fight.
It was anticlimactic, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, all this tension, and then his punch. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
All right, that didn't go quite as the way I thought it would.
Because the music sort of seemed to hint at, oh my God, we're getting a big showdown. Oh, no, we're not.
No, not. No. Well, you never really get it.
No.
No, you never do. Because then he gets locked in the elevator.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
How he traps him in the elevator is amazing. I wouldn't know how to do that, but of course, they're old-timey elevators that you have to operate.
Oh, yeah. I had to make a note of that when I was watching the movie, where they actually had an attendant announcing the floors. Hey, yeah. It was almost like it was this new technology that confused people. It's like, yeah, you need the elevators don't go anywhere if you're blocking the door, sir. And she was very much in her moment of work and...
That one guy trying to hit on her, she's like, I'm not allowed to do this.
I'm not allowed to talk to people on the elevator, sure.
Yeah, and the other guy, but I like how the other guy's like, yeah, no, Janet doesn't like it. Like, he's telling, like, dude, you know this.
Yeah, you've been here before. You know this guy's controlling dick.
What was Janet the little probably patch was listening. That everybody had on their arm, very Gestapo-ish?
I wonder if maybe we missed an allegory for the Nazis in this and just never really didn't translate very well.
Looking at those women with those little patches and then other men with the little patches on the sides.
Maybe it's just a uniform.
I guess, but it looks weird.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's like the security badges in the remake.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe.
Because I did notice during that chase scene between the mercenary guys and Kevin Costner's character when he was running to save Iman, he had his badge on the whole time. They actually... The continuity was great because that badge was always hanging from his right shirt pocket. Always. I'm sorry, but let me tell you, that probably would have fallen off with all the stuff that he was doing.
Yes.
The continuity on the photo wasn't so great.
No.
It didn't match what we actually saw. But.
It did not, but...
Not even a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is ironic.
We spend that much amount of time on that goddamn photo, and in the end, they didn't get it right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should at least try there. If it's such a key point of the plot, maybe put some effort there.
Yeah. It's like the Bigfoot photo.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They certainly treat it like the Bigfoot photo. Like, that could be a Bigfoot, or it could be somebody's thumb.
Yeah.
Well, for Pete's sake, at a certain point, but DNA testing was around in the 80s. Am I wrong?
This was 87, so I would think so.
There was a certain amount of it.
And all they got was the blood type from the semen sample?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't as advanced as it is now, obviously.
Okay.
I think that's as much far as they could get is like blood type.
Look how long it took to get a gift report.
That's true, but it was one of those oldie-timey printers like,
Again, I mean, they were using what back then was considered a supercomputer, which had less memory than our phones.
Yeah. Yes. But you know what else I could do with my computer? Run a trailer.
Woohoo!
They needed a hero.
Anderson, he has a background in intelligence.
There's two tourists with naval intelligence.
Get him here.
He liked excitement.
Take us somewhere.
He wanted her. Their passion upset the balance of power.
What's all this top secret business I've been hearing about over at the Pentagon?
You know I work for Bryce?
Then that makes two of us.
This one can do things for me like no other woman I've ever met.
Behind the cover-up.
Try and understand.
The power.
The important thing is to abort an investigation before it ever gets to you.
You haven't told me everything.
Who's running this thing at the Pentagon?
The new boy, Farrell.
So he can take the fall in case anything goes wrong.
The loyalty.
I love you. I promise I'll work everything out.
How did you actually meet the Secretary of Defense?
I need a car. It's an emergency.
These people have already tried to kill one person who knew.
Bring this one down.
No, you can't take that.
Behind the deceit.
If it were your intention to bring down David Bryce, then I'd have no choice but to make sure that you didn't get away with it.
They mean to kill me, Sam.
Because of the truth, there's no way out. Kevin Costner, Gene Hackman, Sean Young, Will Patton, No Way Out.
All right, that was No Way Out from 1987. And hopefully they've just put this thing to bed. But you know what? Which one of these do you think did you enjoy more? I mean, I don't think either one of us were, any of us were really big on either one of these movies. For me, I think I like The Big Clock a little bit more because it has those breaking moments with a little bit of humor. Like the guys in the bar, when they get questioned, they realize, oh, they're after our buddy, and just come up with a ludicrous description. Oh, yeah, the guy with the glass eye, and who's instantly fired for putting something so obviously ridiculous as evidence.
Or the little moment where the lady, the girl's talking to him on the phone, Stroud on the phone, is like, I'm on the phone. She's like, I'm talking. I'm like, I'm on the phone. He's like, shh, the lady's talking.
There are some good moments in The Big Clock. Yeah. Honestly, I think that I like the climax of No Way Out just a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And I mean, when I say just a little bit, I mean just a little bit.
Yeah.
Mostly just because it definitely felt more relatable to me because I was turning into an adult around that time, so I could relate to it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Until the stupid twist that I've already emphasized more than once. But on the whole, I think The Big Clock is probably still a slightly better movie.
I was so irritated. I think The Big Clock, it's weird. If I could combine both of these movies into a great movie, I really would. Because most of The Big Clock, I'm so angry at this guy. I'm like going, I don't give a crap if you get away with it. I really don't care. I kind of want to see Harry Morgan really go to town on you because I'm kind of curious how that would look.
Yeah.
But the very, very end with the elevator shaft, I'm like, I feel somewhat satisfied by this ending. But in No Way Out, I still find Kevin Costner, actually, even though it's kind of boring, he's quite watchable. And you're right, the climactic bit, going through the Pentagon, the point I really liked about that bit of the ending is when he gets far enough away from the guys and there are naval officers there. He's like, I'm your superior officer, you have to arrest that man. And the guy's like, they're trying to argue, but this is a naval officer, you can't. He has to listen to Costner. He can't do anything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Costner's character is more likable because, he's a man in love, right? I mean, you don't know that he's a shit heel until the end.
Yeah. And if you cut off that last 3 minutes, I swear to God, it's a good movie. A decent movie.
It's a dated,
but dated, but okay movie.
Yeah. You know, with No Way Out, they stuck through the Big Clock pattern so closely that I'm like, for a political thriller, they should have just backed off a little bit and just taken a little more time to make more logical changes.
Mm-hmm. Because I have to agree,
for happening in the Pentagon, there just seems to be this lack of progress that's happening there, and lack of common sense. It's such a, even, I mean, they kind of deflate that a little bit with even David Price going, this is a stupid plan. this is a dumb plan.
Yes.
Right?
Just let me go to the cops.
and they're just trying to fabricate something. They don't even know if they can figure out.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole bit of it. Yuri's just a rumor at this point.
I mean, other intelligence agencies are realizing how dumb this is.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what's the plan when they can't find a Yuri?
Mm-hmm.
They don't even, that if they can't find a Yuri, everything falls apart.
Yeah, and then there's like subplots with the Phantom Sub and other senators that goes nowhere.
That was there strictly to bring those CIA agents into the movie.
Yeah.
That's the only reason that was there.
Mm-hmm.
Right, is to bring those CIA agents so you could have that one scene.
Yeah, so Secretary Bryce would have
a competing agency.
I don't even think you need a Phantom Sub to have a competing agency. I think once they get to the point where they're doing an investigation without the CIA and FBI, at that point the CIA is like, what the hell are these guys doing?
Yep.
They're leaving us out. You don't even need a Phantom Sub. This should be the suspicious part.
I don't know. I would have said to be continued in The Hunt for Red October.
Yeah.
There you go.
Because at least there'd be a time. Oh, that Phantom Sub.
Yeah.
There you go.
All subsequent re-releases of this movie need to have that at the end.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, actually, no. What they need to do is about 29 to 30 minutes in, they say, stop here, watch Hunt for Red October, then go back to No Way Out.
And it'll still be fucking boring.
Yeah, they just insert it in the middle of the movie.
It might actually be an okay double feature, but you always put your shitty one at the front. So you watch No Way Out, then you watch Hunt for Red October.
True. and then right before that one interrogation scene at the end, they're like, the end.
Yeah.
Don't watch anymore.
Yeah, you know,
this is how you handle a claustrophobic murder, Hunt for Red October.
One of the critics reviews that I read while I was sort of taking a look and coming up with little anecdotes for this, one of the critics said, if you came in 5 minutes late to this movie and left 5 minutes before the end, you saw a pretty good movie. And that's what he said. Pretty good movie. Not great.
Oh, yeah.
But pretty good movie. And I would agree with that. If you miss that first 5 minutes and you miss that last 5 minutes, it is a pretty good movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember part
of... Slow and boring, but pretty good.
True. But I remember part of this movie. I remember the biggest selling point, and I remember them promoting this just a ton in this movie, is the sex scene in the limo. Sexiest sex scene in the limo ever. Oh my God, did you see the sexy sex scene in the limo? When you have to pump that out with your movie constantly, you don't got a lot of substance to work with.
Yeah.
That is true. That is true.
Hey, backseat driving.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who, and plus after this, I'm like going, what would it be like? Do you have enough room in the back of the limo? I suppose it would depend on the type of limo.
It was a pretty big limo.
Yeah, they're just taking in the rear of the limo. Of the limo. Of the limo.
I can't groan loud enough. It's just not possible.
Put up the sunroof and moon people. Anyway.
Then it's a moon roof. Yes.
The sun goes in, the moon comes out.
I love when we get juvenile.
We have to sometimes, because honestly.
Well, I mean, because neither of these movies was particularly entertaining, we have to entertain ourselves somehow, right?
It's been a while since we kind of had one where we're, both movies were kind of like, ugh, okay.
Yeah. I've got to read the story, because, I mean, I'm wondering if it's tighter somehow.
Oddly enough, I want to listen to the radio play, because it's about half an hour shorter than the film is.
See, that would tighten it up. And the thing is, No Way Out is another 20-some minutes longer than the original.
No Way Out is an hour 15. Mm-hmm. Well, 115 minutes, I should say. Not so, an hour 15. 115 almost minutes. And hour 35 for the big clock.
Yeah, so almost exactly 20
minutes
longer.
Yeah, so it's almost 2 hours for No Way Out.
Yeah, and it's largely that's the setup of that relationship between Susan and I can't remember the lead character's name again.
Tom Farrell, Kevin Costner.
Yeah, oh, Tom Farrell. Yeah, so that's it's all setting that up, and I appreciate that they what they're trying to do there. I really do, but they could have taken a good 10 minutes off that and still had that effective development of their relationship. That would certainly would have made the movie a little. It would have picked up the pacing enough for me to make it a little more enjoyable. Because that first 45 minutes, that's really the hard part.
Then he goes on his assignment before he's picked up by the secretary. So he's on the ship and she sends him off, and then they go on their own little trip renting a boat. And that was kind of him going, it was again similar to the picture scene where he's outbidding the
painter,
Patterson. And instead of that, it's like, okay, well, you can rent all these boats. How about that one? Oh, that's my boss's boat. I can't rent that one. How much will it take?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And I'm like, okay, that's a similar scene to what we got, and that's kind of the catalyst to the fight that she has with Bryce. Yeah. But it's kind of arduous. It's like, all right, already. I get it. They love each other. Fuck off already. And not enough for her to, like... And there is an argument where, you know, she's going to leave Bryce.
Yeah, but it's too little too late at this point.
She's very... Because he's aware that, you know, this is going on, that she's seeing somebody else.
Well, I mean, at their very first meeting, she says, like, do you want to get out of here? And she's like, I don't think my date will appreciate it. His wife will love it.
Yeah.
He
knows what's going on.
Yeah. Sean Young's a paid mistress, essentially.
Yeah. Well, he can't be fooling himself. And Kevin knows what's going on.
Yeah. And he's basically hiding her in plain sight. He likes to see her at these public events, even though he's not interacting with her.
Exactly. And they talk about her shop, but not until, like, three-quarters of the way through the movie.
Is
they talk about the fact that
shop or Iman's?
It's her shop. Iman works there. When they interrogate her, she's an employee at Susan's shop.
Oh, see, I got the impression she just came into that shop.
No, she was an employee at Susan's shop. So Susan is a businesswoman.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't portrayed at all up until that point.
No.
Right?
I thought her business was being...
So did I.
A paid mistress. Yeah.
So did I. Right? And then that would have explained why she was continuing this relationship with Bryce now that she's met
Well, and he gets angry at her. He's like, I pay the rent on this place, right before he kills her.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. So, like, because I totally missed that bit.
Yeah. And because it didn't make sense.
No, I mean, it feels so shoehorned in. Iman feels so shoehorned in because they go have sex at her place. and throw her out of her own place.
See, that
so
was
they
weird.
Can have sex over there. I think that's so that she doesn't
get
busted.
Track.
That made sense to me.
Yeah,
I mean, and that was a great way to introduce the Iman character.
Yeah,
but they didn't make very good use of that character.
She could have been used so much better. You're right.
I mean, especially when they set up that whole scene where Tom goes to save her at the shop. His investment in her didn't make sense, even because he'd only met her once before, really.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you're going to show this, like, montage of them falling in love, what you could have had is, like, they're going out on dates and they might be seeing Iman, like, they have the friendliness, like, it's where it's not just these,
they're getting to know each other's friends.
Surreptitious going out things. Like, this is a relationship that's building.
And they did a great job of showing that giddiness of young love with how they were always sort of on each other right up until they left, or he left on his next tour. As much as I hated it, it was done really well.
Yeah, I don't know. That bothered me. I was like, and she's like all crying. I'm like, you just met.
Well, and that's the thing. I don't think there's any indication of passage of time.
No,
I don't think that he was just leaving the very next day.
Yeah, we don't even know how long
he
was still on his own assignment on the boat. So
exactly. So I think that was where they sort of missed an opportunity to show them falling in love. Then they could have cut back a little bit on the way when he gets back.
You're right.
Because it didn't explain why he was calling her from the Philippines and writing letters, because it felt like a one night stand the way it was portrayed in the movie. But it clearly wasn't.
And by that point, he wasn't, or at least he shouldn't have been aware that this was Bryce's mistress.
Yep.
But given the way that movie ends, maybe he always was.
Well, trying
to get into that.
He does say you wanted me to date her or get involved with her. So, she was a target ultimately.
Ultimately.
In that dumb ending.
And again, didn't need to know that. It actually ruined the movie for me
To find out he was a spy, I was already irritated with that movie, and then we find out he's always been a Russian spy. I'm like, fuck this movie.
It's the biggest fuck you to your audience.
It really is. Yeah. Especially considering you actually, as much as it took forever to get there, you bought the love story.
Right?
And then they completely deflate that. They ruined the best part of the fucking movie.
Ugh. Yeah, so disheartening. But yeah, it should have been, because I thought it was the next day when she was dropping him off at the airport. That's what bothered me about it. But if you'd had a little bit of a montage where they're, you know, doing other stuff because he's off for like a week before he has to go back, that would make a bit more sense. I think in a week, you could probably have a relationship or fall in love with somebody.
Yeah, for sure. That part just felt abbreviated and could have been longer. The entire at sea scene could have been 30 seconds. We didn't need the rescue scene. We didn't need the phone call from the Philippines.
I would have had a different...
I think they were just jamming it into the middle of a long romance scene. Like, that's the first 45 minutes of the film. So let's throw some kind of action in there. And it does feel a little shoehorned in there, but it's something.
Yeah.
Right?
But if you take out that ending, you don't even need the whole scene where he chases the kid, because the handoff doesn't need to happen. I mean,
if you take out the spy sequences and stuff, it tightens up the film a bit more.
It does. And I mean, you can still have the scene in the strip club if you want, right? But he doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, his have his buddy egg him on, like, come on, I have no time off. Like, I mean, I'm single. I don't need to care about this stuff. And he's like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
And he kind of goes to keep his buddy out of trouble. That would make him a much more likable character as well.
Did it? My favorite bit in the whole movie is in that scene, though, where his buddy throws his money at the stripper and he goes, that was my money. Go get it back. I actually did laugh out loud. Right. It's like, because he was mad. He was mad. But it was funny because it's like, no, go get it. Yeah. I'm serious. Go get it. That wasn't your money to throw at the strippers.
Should have the buddy be like going, I can't do that. We'll have to go to a bank.
Yeah.
I want him to not want to take it back from the strippers.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll fight you.
Yes.
Oh, as they should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once it's on there, it's not yours anymore.
Nope.
But yeah, I actually did find that really entertaining, that little bit. Because it's
the only humorous break that movie has. There's a little, you get a little jovial banter out of Hasselman, but really there's not a lot of comedic break in this movie. It's not like it's a heavy movie, but given the subject matter, you figure it'd have a heavier tone than it does.
I think Sean Young this like kind of giddy sort of like, again, the pre-manic Pixie Dream Girl, just make them have like a lot more humor and lightness in their affair. Because like it seemed too, I don't know, I wasn't really caught up in much of the quote unquote romance of it, but like to have some humor there, you could obviously do that. Because I mean, gosh, like you, if you can hang out and be in love and laugh together, that's a connection.
Yeah. Mm. And I think that having those moments of brevity and lightness, that's the wrong word, sorry guys, but the of humor, it would be levity. That was what I was looking for.
Yes.
It would have helped really undercut that tension that's there as well because of her relationship with Bryce.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. You do get some of that stuff in The Big Clock, which is, I think, mm-hmm. why ultimately I actually enjoyed that it's a little bit more, even though it's just dumb as fuck.
Like yeah. when they're going around looking for a green clock, and then he's like, oh my God, you see the painting, and they go into the antique store.
I never understood his obsession with a green clock.
Green is Janice's favorite color. He's also obsessed with clocks. So the key is they have this to look for a green clock because that's the ultimate thing.
His drunken way of saying fuck you.
Yeah, it's like he's like, I can find the ultimate Janice fetish object and it is a green clock.
Yes. Putting a color into a black and white film is just ironically
That bothered me.
Yeah, it's ultimately not going to be super effective. It is green. Why is it green? Because we told you it's green. Yeah.
Look at this handkerchief with the green stain on it. I guess.
Yeah. If you say so.
Yep. We'll buy it because you told us we have to.
Yeah.
Because we already did. We paid our dime to get into this theater to watch this.
I'm sure they filmed it in green. I don't see why they'd lie.
Yeah, really the only failing for me in The Big Clock is that our hero is so really unlikable.
But you know what? Mm-hmm. They're both movies.
I liked Costner's. I liked Tom.
I found him okay. Like I find Costner very watchable.
More. Yeah, I liked him more.
I thought he was – Costner ultimately I found more incompetent at what he was trying to accomplish, and he was just scrambling to stay underneath it.
Yeah.
Other than – Ray Milland's George Stroud, I thought was far better at trying to get ahead of it.
In terms of skill and competency, yes.
Yeah.
Stroud is better at his job.
But also working with him, he can manipulate a lot more events in his benefit by sending the wrong people to the different jobs if he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
He has more at his fingertips that he can do to cover his own.
Yeah, the problem with Stroud as well is the people he's handling to do this investigation.
He made them too good.
They're too good. Yeah. So when he does put them on a wild goose chase, they're kind of like, well, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
And I guess you do have that moment a little bit within No Way Out when Hesselman is trying to delay the photo deliberately to give Tom Farrell some more time.
Well, and I think part of the problem that Tom seemed less competent is because they overdid the assistant's character. He was always there, always controlling things, and I actually felt it for Tom. It's like, well,
Pritchard was just like on him like crazy. Yeah, it's like, well, if he's supposed to investigate, why aren't you letting him do that and questioning everything he's doing?
I felt they set that up at a certain point where Kevin Costner's like, what the hell is going on here? You're bringing these assassins, and like they have this really big blowout. And I think at that point, Pritchard's like, I can't fucking leave him alone. I don't trust him to do this right.
Mm-hmm. But Pritchard had never left him alone to begin with. He was always dogging his heels, like from like. Every scene where there's Tom, there's Pritchard trying to control the situation because he's afraid that Tom's actually going to figure it out.
Yeah, he's literally over his shoulder. Yeah. If you look just like fell backwards with a conveniently planted elbow, you would have killed this fucker.
Yeah, yeah, he was always there.
he was so close.
And I think that's part of the reason this movie annoyed me so much is because you never get that moment of independence that George gets in The Big Clock.
Mm-hmm.
George is in control. Of his circumstances, like you said, he feels more competent, and they took that away from this character because they set him up as very competent leading up to it, right? When he manipulates the CIA agent and does the heroic rescue, and then they just yank that right out of underneath you. It's like, well, this guy's super competent, but you don't get to see it anymore.
neener, 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 right? We're going to have this asshole who's going to keep him from doing it.
I didn't know you were going to quote the movie.
Yeah, neener, neener. There's a neener, neener, neener.
It was hard to take the movie seriously when they use lines like that.
Yes.
I will pay good money to have them remake a scene from this movie where Pritchard says neener, neener, neener.
Yeah, but
come on, Will Patton, just send me a clip saying neener, neener, neener.
Yes,
you
please
can do.
Do
this. We love you, Will Patton.
We really do. It's unfortunate you had to play this particular character, but we know that was early in your career.
And it was probably a good movie in 87. Oh, much yeah. lower expectations in the 80s. I remember the TV I was watching in the 80s. And none of it ages well.
We've seen some terrible, terrible movies, but ultimately... His performance in this is not the worst we have ever seen in anything. Like,
no.
It's still real good.
The performances in this movie are strong all the way across the board.
Mm-hmm.
It's, well, except for Sean Young, as I said. But I don't know.
I mean,
I think that's partly direction.
Yeah, I think that was maybe what she was directed. I think you're grading her harsher than I am.
Yeah.
But and think of 87, she was the known girl. As the femme fatale for a few years.
Yeah,
that was kind of what she was, the role she was getting.
And maybe it's just the character I didn't like and not her. I'm being a little harsh on her.
I think it was through this lens that this was shown when it shouldn't have been. Like, maybe that is it. She's just performing this. Because, I mean, she is a mistress. Like, I thought she was a professional mistress. So apparently, like, throughout all of these, like, when she's in that big event... She's very kind of quippy, very femme fatale, very different than she is with Kevin Costner when they go away together. It's like she's always performing a role.
Yeah, I think you guys have hit the nail on the head. It's not Sean Young that I didn't like it. I think it was the character, because the mistress in The Big Clock, really classy. Right? Elegant, smart, like quippy, but not flippant.
And she can sneak into Janice's office because she's smart enough to know how.
Yeah, and that's... where I think they dropped the ball with this character is you lost that elegance and that class. Because I just didn't find Susan very classy. Like, for example, that scene where she's naked under the fur coat. Like, not classy.
Sexy as hell, though.
I think that was, I could go with the sexiness. What I would have preferred is if, like, they sort of hint at it when they're having the thing and she's sitting next to Pritchard at, like, an event that she's, again, supposed to just show up at. I just wish they would have made her smarter. Like, at the certain point, is like, going, I can't trust Bryce as far as I can throw him, and I can't be his mistress forever, so I better have something in my back pocket just in case shit goes wrong.
Mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately, if she had a legal business of her own, she had a financial fallback, and she had somebody she truly was falling in love with and just could be herself with.
Yeah. But just, I mean, like, dirt on Bryce and just in case.
Oh, I'm sure that would have been a nice subplot, actually,
right?
In a political thriller.
Yeah, absolutely. And you could have used the shop as a device to sort of show that budding relationship, too, where he comes in under the pretense of buying something from her shop to visit with her. And you could show her as a savvy businesswoman.
Oh, and you could have, like, a really playful scene. It's like going, I'm looking to buy something for someone. She's like, well, what do you mean? Like, I'm looking to buy something for some, like, this really beautiful woman. She's like, oh, what kind of woman? And she's like, I don't know. Maybe you could try some stuff on. Like, you could have this really sexual seduction scene in the shop.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could have been a lot more fun. And it would have
been playful.
Playful and move the story along. In a maybe a more effective manner, because it would have established the Susan character as being something more than a plaything. And that's just hit it. She feels like a plaything for both men.
Yes.
Yeah.
They go, you know what? If we're thinking about this again, we remake these movies. It's ripe for a remake considering the time frame it came out. Yeah. 30 more years.
Back in The Big Clock, when he tells Steve all about it, but then he tells the was that Harry Morgan who's massaging him, and knows everything. I kept getting the feeling that he wanted to pop and say something,
right?
And never, like, he never says anything at all, ever.
I know.
Maybe
it
was a higher
so effective.
It did. It was just like, I'll keep that secret. Yeah. But he just looks like mean all the time. But I wasn't sure if he had this hatred toward his boss or this guy who's
or he's playing
around
some other angle.
Yeah, I kept thinking something else was there, and I'm like, there's a whole other movie happening here that I'm unaware of.
Yeah, like, have another sub movie like a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern with that guy.
Yeah.
Where he talks.
Also, not saying anything. No, he did. Oh, really? I love the fact he doesn't talk, because it just made him really menacing.
Yeah. I kept thinking really he was holding back. It was like, I totally want to snitch on my boss.
Yeah. Well, he has so many secrets. I think if he opened his mouth, that would be all that would come out.
His head would explode.
Yeah. Right. Because you kind of get the feeling that he's done wet work for his boss before.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When he pulls out that gun to go in the clock, you know it.
The only thing I thought that Janeth was missing was a white cat stroke.
You're right.
Right? Like, he does feel like a Bond villain.
Yeah, he's really, really not a good human being.
What's that Bond movie with Jonathan Pryce as a thinly veiled Fox executive?
Oh my gosh, I can't remember. Die Another Day?
Something like that. Yeah, it was...
about Tomorrow Never Dies.
Oh, that might have been it. Yeah. Tomorrow Never Dies.
There's Tomorrows and Dies. There's a lot of those in the Bond library. There are,
yes. I think that might
day,
be the one.
Day, Die, Tomorrow. Look them up.
Actually, some friends of ours on another podcast, they figured out the word that appears most frequently in Bond film titles, and it's never.
Never Say Never Again.
Yeah, well, see, that
but
was
they never
in
did.
One title. They used it twice.
Yeah, exactly.
They're just like really shoehorning it in.
You've got Tomorrow Never Dies and
yeah.
Ah, never.
Yeah, not including the common words. But
oh yeah, the articles, you can't count those.
No, if they're not worth capitalizing, they don't count.
Exactly. Like if you were to say like how many movies start with T because of the no.
No, and I think Live is a close second.
Right.
Yeah.
When does Die happen?
I don't know. I didn't get that far into the rabbit hole.
Okay, that's my job now.
Well, shit, I've got the box set sitting upstairs. Yeah.
We can count.
Yeah, and if it turns out they're wrong, because I'm going off based off their information, we'll let you guys know.
Nice. Yeah.
But yeah, we actually had a couple shout-outs this week.
We have a couple. We have Besotted Geek. Some friends of ours on Twitter were generous enough to include us in their episode. This will be 2 weeks ago now by the time you hear this. But we just want to say, hey, give these guys a listen. They're a lot of fun.
Thanks, guys.
Yes, thank you very much for including us in your episode. And then our friends at the Brocast Podcast. If you're into wrestling, these guys are great.
Nice.
Hey, bro.
Yeah.
Brother.
Yeah. They they also gave us a shout out a couple weeks ago, and we want to make sure that they get a show of our appreciation for the love, and definitely, by all means, check them out. They did had a lot of fun doing a SummerSlam contest that is now over, so go check out their Twitter feed and their episodes.
Oh, yeah, I dig it.
If it's a wrestling I don't know. If it's a wrestling broadcast, I keep thinking we should do like, you know when they used to do those interviews, like, I'm going to kill you, but we do it like, I'm going to listen to you. I'm going to listen hard. I'm going to put you in my ears. Did you hear me, Brocast?
I love it.
Stick you in my ear holes.
And then you're going to go into my brain.
And I'm going to be so hard.
You're going to love it. It's going to be great.
Lust in his eyes.
Because when I listen, and I so hardly listen, I actively listen.
That was amazing.
Where do you go from there?
That was amazing. So yeah, go check out our friends.
Yes, please do. They've been great for supporting us.
Brocast and the...
Besotted Geek.
Besotted Geek.
Besotted Geek.
That is a cool name.
Yes, it is a cool name, and it's a fun podcast.
I'm not familiar. What character do I do for that one?
Well, Besotted.
Besotted Geek.
Slurring your words is probably a good way to go.
Really? I thought besotted was like being in love. Like, you're just, I'm besotted.
Yeah, you know what? You may be correct.
Besotted
Melissa,
Geek.
If you're listening, I'm sorry. I should know better.
For art thou, Melissa, thy besotted geekdom. Thy trek and thy wars,
a different podcast, but.
Both of thine stars, in my eyes, in my heart.
That's classier than any podcast that we associate with.
Thy besotted geek. Be well.
You guys, if you're listening or you've listened, feel free to clip these and use them for your promo as well. Just give us credit. That was so much fun. Thank you, Trish.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Jake.
Well, I think we've run
out
of
time. We're not mocking you, our friends.
No. This is all for love.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. But I think we've run out of time on the big clock.
Love it.
But there's still no way out of these movies.
There's no title for me now.
You're not the only one who can pun.
Yeah, this is a water world of movies like this.
Oh, you want to go into like Kevin Costner's library? Because no way, that is untouchable.
Untouchable. Hey, you know what? There's Fields of Dreams in Kevin Costner's library. That's no Bull Durham.
I don't know if they can hear the side, but
that's no Bull Durham.
You guys are such rookies.
We're doing our best, man.
I'm trying to figure out how to Wyatt Earp pun out of that.
Yeah. Or something about dancing
Wyatt
wolves.
Earp? Wyatt not.
All right.
Sorry you guys can't see the head shakes.
I think they can hear them.
He's a man of steel. He was in that.
He really was.
That got an outgrown.
All right. No more Kevin Costner next week. We'll be remaking something cool. Next week's our third anniversary.
Yes. Yeah,
and it has an interesting tie into this week's episode, believe it or not.
And we'll save that because if he can remember by the time we record.
I won't forget.
Yeah. Okay.
I will not forget.
Oh.
Given the association.
Oh, you got your notepad out.
I have one more thing I wanted to say. Like the big clock.
I said we're out of time.
Oh,
go ahead.
You have time for this. The artist Patterson in this movie, Elsa Lancaster, she's great. Just great. If you're going to watch The Big Clock, really just fast forward to her scenes because she's the best part of that movie.
She really is.
She really is.
That job. I really adored her. That's a kind of character that they should have just tried to figure out how to get her back into this movie. Absolutely. Into No Way Out.
They really should have, yeah.
Yeah. It was quite wonderful.
You needed that lunacy.
Mm. Yeah.
That's all I had.
Okay. So if she were to do our promo for, you know, Facebook and Twitter.
Well, the broadcast was a lot like my first husband. He was very interesting. And I really enjoyed that. The besotted nerd. Oh, very besotted with nerddom and with me. It was wonderful. But he died, lost at sea, you know.
Okay, I was trying to get you to do it for us, for our social media.
An Invasion of the Remake. That was my last and final husband, Edgar. Oh, I loved him so. He was the one that died, but of natural causes, of course.
That does not bode well.
No. So send out your best wishes and your thoughts at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com. Say nice things in our obituary.
Just a third anniversary. I don't know what's going to happen.
What is that? First anniversary is what? Paper. What is our third?
Tin?
Leather? Oh, leather.
Okay, we might have to pick a different movie if that's the case.
I'll settle for pleather. No animals were killed in our anniversary.
Very good.
There we go. Yeah, I don't know if it's leather or not.
We're making it up.
We have no idea. We do not research anniversaries at all.
Oh, I will. By next week, I'll know. I have a whole week to research the anniversary.
True. So.
It just shows you how last minute I am. Oh, fuck, it's our anniversary. Go get flowers.
Hey, they've got great gas station flowers now. Don't mock the gas station flowers.
You know what? The cheap supermarket flowers last longer than ones you get from a florist anyhow.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
From experience, buying them last minute for anniversaries.
Good tip.
And ultimately,
Good thing your wife doesn't listen.
She knows where I get them.
Speaking for myself, if you also are going to like just the store to get like flowers, maybe just skip the flowers. Get a plant. It'll last longer. Because I just don't think dead things say love.
You know what else says love? Shouting out your favorite podcast, Invasion of the Remake, on your social media sites and giving us a 5-star rating and a review on iTunes. That would be awesome. We would love you for it eternally.
Mm-hmm. We do love those people who have already done it.
Also lasts longer than flowers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
real love. That's true.
real love. And you can tell all your friends about how much you love us, this unrequited love for us, by telling them where to find us, because that's not stalkery at all. iTunes.
This love story took a turn.
Just like our movie.
Yes.
iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn, Radio Player FM, Audio Boom, Blueberry, iHeartRadio, and
freaking YouTube.
Freaking YouTube. We drop every Tuesday on our podcast apps and every Thursday on YouTube. If you want to know why, because I feel like it. Mm-hmm. No, our entire library isn't on YouTube, and we do want to encourage you to hit us up on all those other podcast providers, whatever one's most convenient for you. We try to keep them up as long as we can over there, but, you know, YouTube can be finicky.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the story there. Yeah, so, God, I'm all eager for our third anniversary. Can't believe it's been 3 years already.
Yes.
Me either.
It's flown by.
It has really flown by. Because I went back, and I think my first episode was episode 41.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a cascade of earballs and podcasts and movies and no signs of ever stopping.
Oh, no. Well, that was the thing. Like, the entire business model of our podcast is just being reinforced constantly.
Yes.
Yeah, like, we can't keep up. There are so many remakes coming out that I've lost track of what's coming.
And we could have just done comparison episodes, but it's not as creatively fun for us. So.
Oh, exactly. Well, I mean, we feel in some ways the system is broken, and some of these remakes need to be done, and we know what to do.
Full point of it, yeah. All right, well, that was The Big Clock and No Way Out.
Yeah.
And
yes, it was.
It was a thing.
We saw those.
So glad it's over.
We saw those. Yeah, we did.
I mean, it was more fun to talk about these movies than it was to watch them.
Yeah. Do you feel like the irony is the first movie was The Big Clock, and then in No Way Out, it felt like it wasted so much of your fucking time?
Yep.
Yes, time was definitely a factor. Well, I'm hoping next week will be better. I haven't seen that movie. I haven't actually seen either one of these movies either, so... This week's been interesting because, yeah, next one I haven't seen, but
it's surreal.
It is. It's going to be weird one.
Good.
It could be. I think I'll enjoy watching it, but it could be hard to remake. We'll see.
Yeah. It's going to be a challenge.
It's going to be tough.
You picked it, so I'm going with it because I love this movie.
But you know what? Sometimes, as we found out in like the last few episodes, like there can be challenges where we just find that magic.
We're always up for a challenge. Even for the ones that were, like, impossible to remake, we usually find an angle, even if it's dumb.
Yeah. Even if we fail, we fucking try.
Yeah.
If we're going to fail, we're going to fail funny.
Fair. Yeah. That's what you could put in an obituary. At least they tried. They failed, but they tried.
They failed, but they tried. It sounds like we died trying to do something. Like, if you see that on a headstone, you're like, at least they tried. Tried what? I need to know so I don't do that.
Exactly. It's humanly impossible, like shoving your own head up your ass. Right? They failed, but they tried.
With that, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And I continue to be Trish.
We are out of here. Oh, wait, there's no way out.
You had those apes kill him, didn't you?
No.
You lying sack of shit.
Tom is the man who saw you at Susan's. He's known about you all along. Isn't that right? You know what that means, David. If Commander Farrell is the man who was with Miss Atwell, then Commander Farrell is the man who killed Miss Atwell. And we know that the man who killed Miss Atwell is Yuri. Therefore, Commander Farrell is Yuri Quad Erat Demonstrant.
You murdered Sam, did you? You asshole.
You have no idea what men of power can do.
Fuck!
Wait, sick fuck!
Scott has been a loyal and valuable friend. I let that friendship cloud my judgment. My actions have been inexcusable. Scott!
God! Give me the gun.
This is the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. But I swear, I'll do everything I can to help you out. Everything. I'll get you the best lawyers.
David? He doesn't have a shred of proof.